Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Well, we're going to have a lot going on today. Mitch Rupert's going to join us today. Huh? Good man, Mitch. Does a lot of good work. And how are you doing today?
We're awesome. How about you, sir? Terrific Tuesday.
Yes, terrific Tuesday. Great to have you. So I had a chance. Going to have a couple of interviews today. Neil Coulong and Ben Jones. Good, we're all set, right? This is the day Comcast decided to do some work and shut down things.
Uh-oh. Ruh-roh.
So we may have to reschedule. Hey, the way it goes, right?
That's right.
Yeah, don't worry about that. The Phillies return to action tonight. They got Detroit, and Aaron Nola goes tonight. It'll be very interesting to see what the Phillies do. And remember what the new rules are this year. There is one trade deadline, and only one trade deadline. That's it. No more of this game of clearing waivers, and if you clear waivers and you're dealt before August 31st, you can be eligible for the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. No. You make your move one way or the other by July 31st. And teams have to make a very careful decision. Are you a seller or are you a buyer? And let me give you one that has now put itself into a precarious position as to how they want to proceed with their season. The San Francisco Giants. Suddenly, they're playing well. So what are they? A buyer or a seller? It's always an interesting question. Now, I know with our Shikalimi broadcast, I know exactly who I want to buy and who I want to sell. That's not very funny.
1 month till kickoff.
Does he know?
Oh, God, I hope so. Wait, that's him right now. It's actually not.
Yes, it is exactly a month, isn't it? It's July 23, yeah. It's exactly 1 month before high school football kickoff. It's interesting. We were talking today about camps. And, for example, the Hawaii, Arizona, Miami, and Florida all will go to camp at the end of this week because they play, quote, week zero, which is August 24th. So they get to go to camp at the end of this week. NFL training camps are opening. Ed Kratz was on with us yesterday. We have Joe Rutter today. So we talked about the Eagles yesterday. We'll talk about the Steelers today. And they're opening. And then, of course, Penn State football camp. And the next week they'll open. And high school camps will then open. Everything is so different now compared to when we were younger. James Franklin, for example, will tell you at East Stroudsburg they had 3-a-days. Never recall a 3-a-day here in the years I've covered Penn State. Never. It's always been 2-a-days. And 2-a-days were important because, look, that was part of the getting in shape process. You also want to find out when you're fatigued and the going gets tough, who can actually perform at a level that can help you. But all those rules have changed. They're trying to avoid a Corey Stringer ever happening again. They're trying to avoid that. And, of course, you know what happened in Maryland with McNair. And trying to avoid that. Now, that was not a, McNair was not in a camp. That was in a training session. That was in an off-season workout. But that's what they're trying to avoid. They're also trying to avoid the possibility of concussions in camp. So let's go by each level. To be honest with you, the one that might be the easiest level is the NFL in terms of the camp. Because they mandate through the union in no uncertain terms that how much time you're allowed to hit or do anything, how many days are with pads, without pads, so forth. Okay. College football, no 2-a-days. No 2-a-days. Now, they do have acclimation at the beginning, but coaches try to be as smart as they can when it comes to how many days with pads. Very important. And you often get, and once again, people have a tendency to focus strictly on their team. I understand that. Why is Penn State's tackling so poor at the beginning of the year? Well, tackling is poor everywhere in college football at the beginning of the year. Tackling is poor at the beginning of the year in the NFL. Why? Because there are mandates on how much you can hit. And if you're wondering why tackling continues to be poor on a repeated basis in the Big 12 allows you to have contact twice a week with pads. The second one is the game. That's the Big 12 rule. So if you're wondering why, there's a reason. Usually a lot of times the tackling, to get better at tackling, usually is happening in the games now, NFL, college, whatever. Now let's take it to high school football, since that's where this discussion began. In order to accommodate the early start of August, in this particular year, August 23rd, I believe, Sean, now the teams that used to scrimmage twice only scrimmage once in the preseason. And coaches will tell you that's become a difficult proposition for them.
Yeah, especially here in the last 3 years when the regular season schedule moved up from Labor Day weekend to the week before.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I was just talking about. The fact that the bottom line is coaches really have to adapt, and in order to accommodate the early start, because now you got 5 billion games at the end. Hey, look, it's the 8th seed in class, whatever. Really?
And growing up for the longest time, I always thought of high school football practices as 2-a-days. It was that way for a great long stretch. But yeah, now when it comes to injuries and hydration and
and concussions,
right?
You're constantly on guard about that. So you try to do thud. Thud is like catch and release when you're fishing. You know, goes up, I drop down, boom, I wrap you, but then I release you. So at least I've gone through the semblance of a tackle, the beginning stages of boom, wrap, then release. Then some do tag off. There's a proper way to do tag off. But again, the bottom line is trying to keep the collisions at a minimum. And so many teams do that now.
It sounds like tag off is kind of like a spin off of flag football. Right or wrong?
Not really. Flag football, you can reach. All right, so flag football, you're running, and I can reach, and I can grab the flag. Tag off, you actually have to, with two hands, get to said individual's going to be tackled. You got to get both hands on them, and then, boom, just go away. There's no wrap and release. Thud is wrap and release. Tag off is, boom, I'm there. I've got both hands off you, and then, boom, let you go after that. So it's not like flag football, because flag football, you can reach and grab a flag. So that's a little bit different. Everything's different, and that's why the first couple of weeks, the games themselves bring with them some challenges. Because, A, coaches would love to have that second scrimmage to evaluate where everybody stands. And number two, they did not move back preseason practice. So you go out, you practice, you scrimmage, then the next week you're getting ready for a game. As I mentioned many times here before, there are also too many playoff games, which is one of the reasons you have the schedule the way you have it. Too many playoff games. Huh. Some people may not like my opinion about that. Fine. You can have your opinion. And there's no real right or wrong here. But do you really need that many district playoff games? Do you need teams in your district playoff that don't have a 500 record just to fill a spot? Fill a spot. Move on. Have it mean something. I'd rather see this season start on Labor Day, but, I mean, look, we all adjust. I mean, if they want to start now, okay. That's perfectly fine. But, I mean, that's the way camp is now. Camp is completely different than it used to be. We'll take a break. And coming up 3:35, we'll talk with Joe Rutter about the Steelers. He's from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Mitch Rupert at 4:06 from the Williamsport Sun Gazette on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Pro sports teams are losing fans. Article written by 24/7 Tempo. Here are 12 that they cite. The Indianapolis Colts, from 2008 to 2018, they saw an 11% drop in attendance at home. Okay, their average attendance in 2008, Peyton Manning was their quarterback, of course, 66,378, so they averaged 105.4% of capacity. Had a 12-4 record. Well, guess what? They were 10-6 in 2018. 59,199, 94%. Okay. Carolina Hurricanes. They're still the Whalers, they'd be drawing. What? Their attendance is down 13.6% in 10 years. The 08-09 average, 16,572. Not bad, 88.5%. Now, when they were Hartford, they averaged 90, 4.5% this year, and they made the Eastern Conference final this year. They averaged 14-3-22, 77%, down 13.6%. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, down nearly 16% in 10 years. 98% of capacity with a 9-7 record 2008, 66-5-11. Now, 54,356, 82.8%, 5-11 record, down 16%. Phoenix Suns have seen a home attendance drop of 17%. 10 years ago, they were 46-36. Good, right? Average, right on the nose of the capacity, 18,422. That's Steve Nash. Now with the young team they have, oh, they're dynamic, they're exciting, they're bad. 83%. They're down 17%, averaging 15,293. Their record, 19-63. Cincinnati Reds, one of the mainstay franchises in the history of baseball. They have seen a 21% drop in home attendance in 10 years. In 2008, they went 74-88, did not have a good year. They still averaged 25,415, 60% of capacity. Now let's go ahead 10 years. They're averaging 20,111, 47.5% of capacity. Down 21%. The Bengals, down 21% in attendance. 2008, they were 4-11-1. Their average home attendance that year was 64,582, 98.6%. Last year, 50,753, 77.8% with a 66-10 record. Down 21.4%. Now, the suits in the back room cheering about this. Until the Steelers come up. No, I'm just kidding. The Steelers are not in this group. The Ottawa Senators, down 23% in 10 years. 08-09, it's a shade above 500. 36-35 with 11 ties. They averaged 18,949, 105% of capacity in Ottawa. This past year, 14,553, 76% of capacity, down 23.2%. They were 29-47-6. The Washington Redskins, right? Number five in biggest attendance drop in terms of percentage, 31%. In 2008, the Redskins were a 500 team at 8-8. Drew 88,604 per game. Those are the tickets sold, 96.6%. This past year, they averaged 61,028, 74.4%. It has 7-9 record. They've lost nearly a third of their home attendance in 10 years. They won a playoff game since 2005. The Chicago White Sox. White Sox TV rating is actually up this year. But here are their numbers. The White Sox, down 34.9% in attendance in 10 years. Average home attendance, 30,877 on the south side. They were 89-74. Good team in 2008. Now, flip it ahead. 62-100, bad team last year. 50% is their of capacity at 20,110, down 35%. The Phillies. Yes, the Phillies have bounced back this year, but the Phillies have had one of the biggest drops in attendance in all of baseball. In 2008, when they won the World Series, they averaged 42,254, 97.1%. But they have dropped 35% in 10 years. Last year, the average attendance was 27,318, down 35%. Tampa Bay Rays, down 36%. And the Detroit Tigers, who the Phillies are playing tonight, their attendance is down 41% in 10 years. Interesting. You got to cultivate the fan. You have to. Joe Rutter, next half hour.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Really glad Mark's going to do that show on autism. For more than 10 years, I took some time and emceed the annual autism 5K run, 3K walk here in State College. It was organized by the students on campus. And part of the script every year would be me telling you how many children there were in the country with autism. You know, at one point it was like 1 in 260, then it was 1 in 200, then it was 1. Every time I turned around, the number got lower and lower and lower. I'm really glad Mark's doing a show about that. And hopefully it'll be very informative for all of you. That's coming up. All right. Okay. We talked about the Eagles camp yesterday. And in talking about the Eagles camp yesterday, I thought it was an interesting conversation, especially like, what are you going to do with the backup quarterback spot? Something they have to fill. Now let's flip it over to the western part of the state and the Steelers. Joe Rutter, fresh off vacation. The first thing he has to do is talk with us. He's going to be going to St. Vincent College in La Trobe. Joe, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Oh, winding up a nice stretch of vacation, getting ready for some football.
I was going to say, I mean, does this feel like New Year's Day? Is it you're making the transition to the new year? All right, so the Steelers have been an interesting team to cover in recent years because they've had, quote, very interesting personalities. I think that's a fair way to start out. How do you view going to this camp without as many intriguing personalities around anymore?
Probably more businesslike, and you know, which necessarily won't be a bad thing. I think we'll find out what the tone is on Thursday to see if I don't think anybody's going to drop in on a helicopter or parachute in or drive a fire truck in, any of that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be you know, pretty businesslike, and you know, I think they've been kind of told to tone things down, especially this year when they've kind of pushed this team aspect and trying to get rid of the drama and things like that. I think they're going to try to be as low key and as boring as a football team can possibly be.
Can they, in the end, as a when they play the games, do you think the Steelers will be a boring team to watch, or do you think there's something that's dynamic about this team that can be exposed?
Well, that's a big question. I think they're going to be. I think they're going to try to maybe not throw the ball as much, maybe run it a little more, establish that. But I think that they still have enough playmakers. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster and and you know, whoever emerges on the other side there. And I think James Conner has a chance to be a pretty good back. You know, if he gets through a full season healthy. You know, I think they have. You know, I think that I don't know if it's necessarily addition by subtraction, but you know, they've gotten rid of some high quality playmakers, some all pros, but you know, they've got some impressive young players behind them that they want to see, and I think with Ben Roethlisberger there, they can still have, you know, a fairly productive offense.
Roethlisberger did some really good things last year, and you know, I believe I want to say Joe, his passing yardage number was a career high, he also led the league in interceptions last year. You know, were there times when you watched Ben where you thought he was forcing it, or were there circumstances behind that, like a tip ball, somebody runs a wrong route, something like that?
Well, when you do lead the league in attempts, and you know, you're going to have interceptions, so you know, that kind of goes hand in hand. And I thought they threw the ball a little too much. You know, I thought they could have established the running game more. I mean, they easily had the most skewed pass to run ratio in the NFL, so I think they'll try to get back to that. But I, you know, I think some of it too was, you know, you had to keep Antonio Brown happy. You had to throw him so many passes. I think on some of those targets, that's where balls, you know, maybe were forced in, and that led to some interceptions. You know, I think that number will come down. I think that's a point of emphasis for them is to, you know, reduce the number of turnovers they made. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Obviously, Ryan Shazier and attempting to replace him has been extremely difficult. I mean, Shazier was an excellent two-way linebacker. When you look at Devin Bush, does he have the potential, just based on what you've seen college-wise? Because it's got to translate, obviously. But does he have the potential to be a step up for them? Not necessarily being Ryan Shazier, but a step in that direction toward Ryan Shazier.
Well, that's the hope. And, you know, he has the speed that they lack since, you know, Ryan Shazier's injury. They feel more confident there. They've also added another guy in Mark Barron who has, you know, more speed than what they're used to. So I think that was one of the areas they really felt they needed to address. And, I, you know, they think highly enough of him to go up 10 spots in the draft to get him. And, you know, he looks fast. He looks smaller than you would expect. He's not a necessarily big guy.
No, he's not.
So, yeah, so we'll have to see, you know, how he fares when he sticks his nose in there and, you know, hits bigger running backs and receivers. But, you know, they're hoping that, you know, what he has and what he's shown translates to, you know, actual NFL game skills.
What is something, give me a couple of areas you're going to look at going into camp that you're really going to keep your eye on because it could swing the season one way or the other?
You know, the health is going to be able to play a big part of that. With Vance McDonald, I think, at tight end, he, you know, was pretty healthy last year, but the year before that, he missed a lot of time. You know, and I think they really don't have a proven number two since Jesse James left. I think that's something to watch out. The cornerback situation, Joe Hayden, you know, they're going to try to maybe get him under contract for, you know, a couple more years after this one. And, you know, who's, you know, playing next to him? Artie Burns is kind of on his last straw and isn't even penciled in as a starter. So, you know, those in the kicking game. The kicking game is going to be the one thing to watch with Chris Boswell and then dangling the $2 million roster bonus based on how he does in training camp.
Okay, now let's go with some areas they can build upon. What are some areas that, as they build upon, that already can't come into strengths, but they're even going to have to be a little bit better to maybe make up for something?
Well, I think they still have to be better in the secondary.
Yeah.
You know, they went out and got Steven Nelson and are hoping he can be an improvement. And they added Justin Lane, who, you know, they think can eventually play on the outside. But, you know, he's a rookie, and I don't think they're counting on too much from him this year. And with the safety, Sean Davis in his second year at free safety, I think they feel that him and Terrell Edmonds can be a nice 1-2 punch back there, but they're both, you know, they're both actually playing their second years in the NFL at their respective positions. So, you know, the thought is that they should improve there. And, you know, in the backfield, you know, they've got some young players, Benny Snell, who they drafted, I think they want to try to use on third down, short yardage, and maybe, you know, throw some two-man backfields in there to maybe confuse some defenses this year.
Yeah, Snell's going to be an interesting guy for you. He's one of those guys, to be honest with you, Joe, you know, because obviously I did his last game, the Citrus Bowl game against Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
One of those guys where I thought that between the tackles really, really good, and also I thought as the game went, now everybody gets tired, he does not fatigue. But see, with Connor already there, I'm not sure that comes into play because, you know, he's just going to be spotted here and there.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that they want to, you know, maybe limit or pull back on some of James Conner's touches he had last year,
yeah.
And they want to use Jalen Samuels in some passing situations. So I think there is a role there for Benny Snell, be it short yardage, third down, at least to start, or he might be the guy, once Conner's worn him down a little bit, come in the fourth quarter and they're trying to run the clock down, maybe he's the guy that gets the, you know, gets the carries and is asked to do that.
They want to go 3-4 wides in certain situations. Who might be the guys that are good candidates to be the third and fourth guys?
Well, you know, they have James Washington, who they think can be the number two. Dante Moncrief, they really like how he's kind of assimilated himself into the offense and really, you know, gravitated towards Ben Roethlisberger and has picked up the playbook. And then they drafted Deontay Johnson, who I think they would like to have him more in a more in a special teams role at first. But, you know, he's also a guy that they could, you know, that they could use out there. So, I mean, they've got a lot of young players. But I would say Dante Moncrief's the wild card because he's never really put up huge numbers in his career,
right.
But he's never really, in the last few years, has never played with a good quarterback either.
All right, I want to get to a couple of big picture things for a moment, Joe. I want to talk about the 18-game schedule. The NFL for years has been floating this and floating this. We're going to knock two preseason games out. We're going to play 18. You and I both know the players absolutely don't want 18, and I see polls where the fans don't want it. Hey, why do they keep floating it, Joe?
I think that they feel that they can, you know, get even bigger TV money, you know, that they can, you know, get more games out there, get more networks involved. You know, the two extra games they can really push up, you know, and try to get the interest there. I know the players hate it. I don't personally like it. I think the 16-game season is just fine. That's the only thing I can think of is that they just really want to try to keep maximizing this revenue.
But then they float out an idea that, okay, the players can play 16 out of the 18. Now, you and I go to a game. Okay, so Joe and Steve go to a game, and guess what? It's the game that Roethlisberger can't play. All right, now, do we as fans sit there and go, well, I completely understand. I don't understand. It's the one game we're going to.
Exactly. And if you know, especially if you go on the road to see them play, and all of a sudden you've got the backup quarterback in there, you know, I mean, as a team, then what do you sit down before the season and try to pick your spots? Like, okay, well, this is a game we should win. We're going to use most of our backups here. I just think it creates an extra headache for teams that they don't, you know, necessarily have to deal with. And you're going to have to expand the roster up, too, because,
right,
you know, say Roethlisberger's on the inactive list for that game and your backup gets hurt. You know, I mean, you've got to have a bigger roster to get these, you know, in case of these injuries and things like that.
What do you think happens with the collective bargaining agreement? Still got a couple of years here, so they're at least trying to open some doors right now. What do you think in 2 years, where are we?
Well, I think that you know, that the players are going to keep pushing to get more of the part of the pie, and I think this 18-game thing might really, you know, come down to it, or maybe it's just a negotiating tactic, you know, for the owners to get something else. But, you know, the players seem pretty unhappy with, you know, the way it's gone here towards the end, and I think they want to, you know, cut a better deal for them. But, you know, like anything else in these situations, I really don't see it coming, you know, until the 11th hour. I just don't, you know, I think it's all well and good and it's nice they're talking, but, I, you know, unless there's something out there, you know, totally going on behind the scenes, I can't see anything getting done, you know, until this thing, you know, pushing up to a threat of a lockout or whatever.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can see going to the 11th hour. And I think, what is it, the players get, what, 47% of the cut right now? Does that sound right?
That sounds about right, I think, yeah.
So if they get to 50, maybe?
Yeah, you know, and I think the guaranteed contract is going to be the big thing.
Yeah, you know what, that's a good point, Joe.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're seeing more first-rounders get guarantees. I think they want the guaranteed contract, which then that might cut down your signing bonuses because you're going to guarantee a bigger deal, you know, maybe some changes to the way the salary cap is run. But I think the guaranteed contract is going to be the big thing that the players are going to want to get.
All right, so off vacation, the first thing you had to do was talk with me. All right, not exactly the big step forward you were hoping for after vacation.
Joe, we like to ease into these things.
That's right. Hey, Joe, thanks so much for your time, especially on short notice. It was great.
Not a problem, anytime.
Yeah, we actually heard that on the golf course. Well, the suit looked at us. He says, why do I have to pay for all the golf clubs when I only use one?
The one we tried to hide. How strange.
I botched that one up. We're playing, what, the 17th hole? I can't remember what hole we started on. We were playing 17.
Yeah, I think we started 13, 14 that morning. Yeah, it was early.
Yeah. And so I thought I took out the chutter, and I actually took out his 4-iron. I'm like, now, he's not going to miss that because he never uses his 4-iron. In fact, until we put it back, I don't think he realized he even owned one. So, I'm like, okay, all right. Yeah. It was a good gag until, you know, I realized I fouled it up.
You meant well.
I followed it up on good.
You meant well.
Oh, no, I meant ill will.
Well, it depends on what angle you look at it.
I thought in the group, because there was four others in the group, and I thought the four of us would get a good laugh out of it.
Right.
Right. He who has no sense of humor would not. Yet he keeps doing things that show he might have a sense of humor. Really? That's the club you're going to play? But I went through, because he had a cover on it. Not many people cover their irons. But he had a cover on it. So I thought, that's got to be the chutter. It's got a cover on it. And there's a four iron. So then I did change clubs eventually, and he didn't see us do it. Oh, well. You know, it's one thing I did miss this year and was not getting the chutter stats as the round went. Yeah, I can tell you're really, really, I really miss it a lot.
Overrated club, man.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Can I ride with you guys next year? Can't blame you. The Purdy's were the fun group, baby. I told the story. Same thing. We were on 17. Has that pond on the left-hand side.
Oh, yeah.
And we were on some hole. He goes, what ball are you playing on it? Now, all I said, this was on like 14 or whatever. And he said, what ball are you playing? I said, it's the same one I played all day at Titles. He goes, oh, the same one you played all day. I'm like, oh, gee, first cats. All right.
Well, he can't help it. He was up to his fifth ball at that point, so.
Right. I mean,
it's
at
not
that
on
point,
you.
Yeah. Okay. When the free ones plus two are gone, okay, right. not good. Yeah. I only said it just like, well, it's the same one I played all day. It's a Titleist four or whatever. You know, in other words, like I didn't change balls. That was the point I was trying to make. And so he makes the snide remark, well, we get the 17, and I overcooked the driver. And I overcooked to the point where, boom, 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 it went into the lake. Now, for me, I got to hit it pretty hard to do that. And he's laughing and carrying, oh, there goes your one ball. So they're like going, we're on the same team, nut job. That means I've got to, that means I now need to drop. And guess what? I've lost a stroke. Other than that, cheer all you wish.
In his mind, he's moving one closer up to your level.
Do we have to examine what is in that mind?
Ugh.
And that is the reaction I was looking for.
Not enough time.
And to think he could be the all-powerful Oz in a certain period of time. All right, so...
Pay no attention to what's going on behind the curtain.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Oh, jeez.
Oh. So I run this end of the building.
Well, that's I kind of walked past him at one point about a month ago when I was there, and I said, where to next, Captain Smith? Iceberg dead ahead. Oh, God. My goodness. All right, so we're going to have Mitch Rupert next half hour. Just saw Mitch the last couple nights. Excellent writer and just one of the really great guys out there. With Mike Mussina going into the Hall of Fame, Mitch was there. It's going to be great to get his perspective on somebody local going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Gene Segura, by the way, is listed as day-to-day. But then again, aren't we all?
Yes.
Okay. His problem is he has a bruised heel. Tommy Hunter's surgery on his flexor tendon, UCL. No repair was needed, though.
Bryce Harper will be DH tonight in the game against Detroit, hitting third.
To be honest with you, that's where he should be. I mean, he plays hard. You know, I mean, it's interesting. I was talking about Bryce Harper with some friends today. And I said, you know what? I said, and I've said this on the show before, so this is not a foreign concept, okay? But if you look at his career stats, he is what he is. He is not a Hall of Fame player. He's a really, really good Major League player. But he's not a great Major League player. He has moments where he can be great. He has moments where he can slump. He's just a really good player. But he's not a Hall of Famer.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.